The next argued case is number 18-1995, in re Cobler. Mr. Selinger.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Director's Statement of Issues unfairly frames the dispute as whether an ordinary artisan would have found it obvious to use two seals with a plastic trash bag. That's Statement of Issues at page 1. That unfair framework also permeated the Patent Office analysis, resulting in harmful error throughout. The linchpin of the Board's error relates to Figure 8 of Meyer and what a person of ordinary skill in the art would have understood its unlabeled dashed line to be. Mr. Cobler's affidavit established that the unlabeled dashed line in Figure 8 was a drawing artifact that was unintentionally left in the drawing. By way of contrast, the Board began from the very high-level observation that figures 1, 2, and 8 consistently portray drawstrings 9, 10, and 11 within hollow duct 6. From this, the Board jumped to the erroneous conclusion that there was support in the record for the examiner's statement that one could argue that the dotted bottom line of hem 6 is a seal. That conclusion, though, ignores the detailed teaching in Meyer that channel 6 is a continuous channel formed by channel 3 on one side and channel 4 on the back side. That teaching is at app 456, column 3, lines 4 and 6, and then app 457.
Well, the case law is pretty old. Haven't we said that that even unintended or unexplained drawings in a figure can be considered in terms of what one of skill in the art would have understood?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And if we didn't have Mr. Cobler's affidavit in the record, then one could speculate about the meaning of that unlabeled dashed line in Figure 8 to a person of ordinary skill. But Mr. Cobler's affidavit makes it very clear and explains in detail why that unlabeled dashed line is not a seal and why that position, which the government has consistently taken, is inconsistent with both the express teaching of the patent and how a person of ordinary skill in the art would have understood in looking at Figure 1, where there was a cross-section and then the seal line was a solid line across, and then the mirror image in Figure 8, where there was a little cross-section, and then as one of five dotted lines, the unlabeled line, because in that figure, actual seal 5 is shown a bit lower down.
Right, but you're talking about the inventor himself saying, I didn't really mean to put that line in there, but how is that necessarily indicative of what others would understand in looking at that figure?
Well, no, actually, to be clear, Mr. Cobler, who is the inventor of the application and issue here, filed an affidavit explaining in detail how he would understand, how a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand that dotted line to be. It's at A277 through 279.
But other dotted lines were labeled as sealed. This just didn't happen to have a label or a number.
No, Your Honor. The only dotted line that was labeled as a seal in Figure 8 is 5. The other dotted lines, and there were a total of 5, all had labels and all had discussions, except for the one dashed line that continues on just below. And where Mr. Cobbler's affidavit explains that in looking at the two figures, that dot, a person of ordinary skill in the art would treat that as a draftsman error, an unintended consequence that should have been removed, and that a person of ordinary skill in the art would not have taken that to be or to teach a seal.
It makes sense. You wouldn't have a seal in the middle of the bag, but still it's in the inventor's control, and there it is.
And so, in that case, the inventor, Mr. Meyer, had left that in. And the dispute now is whether a person of ordinary skill in the art would have taken that unlabeled dashed line to mean anything beyond a mistake. Mr. Cobbler explains why a person of ordinary skill in the art would not have. And furthermore, he points out the specification for both figures 1 and figure 8 describe channels 3 and channels 4 together making a single channel 9 around the bag. And he also pointed to language in the independent claims. The actual quote is, quote, channels paren 3 comma 4 comma 9. And later on in the claim, it says at least one drawstring extending through the channels. The only way that happens is if 3 and 4 together define a continuous seal. If the dotted line creates a second seal, then 3 is no longer in communication with 4, and it's contrary to the teachings of the patent.
So why wasn't the dotted line just removed from the drawing?
It's not ours, Your Honor. This is the dotted line is in a patent that was filed in 1988.
This is the Meyer patent.
The Meyer patent, yes, Your Honor. The dotted line is not in our patent.
Do you attach any significance in figure 8 of Meyer, which is at 454 of the joint appendix, to the fact that the line to which we've been referring, which the parties have referred to as line X, starts out solid and then goes out in solid form and then becomes dotted? Do you attach any significance to that? I don't know. I'm just asking you.
So Mr. Cobbler in his affidavit explained that. And so there is, in figure 1, there is a, if Your Honor, if you look on the right-hand side of figure 1, you'll see that little cross-section, but then solid line 5 continues all the way across from right to left.
But the board actually said or agreed that there was ambiguity with respect to that.
Yes,
you're right.
But
then it turned around and said that Wernz taught, right, the invention. So why, what are we doing there? They said even if that's ambiguous, we have this other piece of prior art.
Yes, and there are two problems with Wernz. First, the director grudgingly concedes that the combination does not actually, Wernz does not actually itself teach the structure that is actually claimed.
It teaches the overlap, right?
What Wernz shows, and I think the answer to your question, Your Honor, is only with hindsight. What Wernz shows is a two plastic bags where, as a process, a manufacturing process, they're made from a single sheet, and so the front, you start at 23, you go up and you come down, and so the first, the top bag has two full sheets. The bottom of the top bag is seamed the way any bottom would be seamed, the way our bags are seamed, the way Meyer's bag is seamed. There's a seam at the bottom. That's different than a seam at the distal end. What the examiner and the board did is they generalized this to the abstract idea of two ply, let's just put a patch on there, therefore it's obvious. That's not what the claim says, and I submit that the motivations to combine are also wrong.
We've always said that you don't have to have the same purpose as the prior art if you're doing the same thing, if the structure is disclosed, right?
That's correct. It doesn't have to be exactly the same, but absent hindsight, there's no motivation to make that combination. Going back to the Meyer prior art patent, Meyer in column 2 describes that when you're dealing with these sort of commodity products, you want to be careful not to increase the cost manufactured using material, and you don't want to further complicate the manufacturing process. And I believe that's A455 at column 2.
Selinger, can I ask you a question? Is Selinger or Selinger?
Selinger.
Selinger, okay. My apologies. You referred early on in your presentation to the continuous channels, I think, correct? You used the word continuous,
yes.
Channels. Now, but if you look at the pertinent portions of the specification in Meyer, column 3, lines 4 through 6 on 456 of the appendix, and column 5, lines 63 through 65 at 457, they don't say continuous channels. They just say channels 3 and 4. Why could you not have a channel with a break in it? And you'd have the string or the drawstring of the cord in the upper part. You'd still have one channel 3 and on the other side 4, but it wouldn't be, I would grant you, continuous. It would be segmented, correct?
In that hypothetical, Your Honor, and we had this conversation below, if that dotted line forms a seal, then what's referred to as 3 in figure 8 is below the seal, below the top seal. And so what you would have is channel 6 on the front communicating with channel 4 on the back. When you quoted the language correctly, but Mr. Cobbler's affidavit says a person of ordinary skill in the art seeing that language and the claim language, that's the first limitation in each of the independent claims about channels 3, 4, and 6. The government's position, or the hypothetical you've presented, eliminates channel 3 as having a drawstring in it, because the drawstrings 10 and 9 are above the dotted line.
I'm looking at appendix, I think you provide, and these are helpful, appendix 271. You have these drawings, on the left-hand side, mark 13 is a drawing with line X left out. Yep. And you're saying that's the way it should be. And then you're saying here's what we would have in the second drawing, mark 13, where the X. Why couldn't you have the channel in the area that's in that one marked up at 6 in the top, and 3 is encompassing all from 13 to 5, but it's just been segmented at X?
Because that's not what it shows, Your Honor. What this shows is if you put a seal at X on page 271, you have separated channel 3 below from channel 6 above. And the figure immediately to the right shows that drawstrings 9 and 10 pass through channel 6. Segmenting it that way would remove channel 3.
But you've got that bottom line as the bottom of the channel?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
On Appendix 271.
Yes.
Those pages. Okay, so you've labeled N270. Even though the dotted line is much, much lower in the bag, your position is that that's the bottom of the channel?
Yes. And on the figure on 271 on the right, our position is the seal is the dotted line, which is labeled at 5. While in figure 1, the counterpart seal is the solid line labeled 5.
Okay, let's hear from the office. Mr. LaMarca.
William LaMarca for the PTO. I guess as Judge Schall highlighted and as counsel highlighted, really what the dispute's about is figure 8 in the Meyer reference. And if we go back to look at figure 8 again.
Well, it's not, I mean.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The board conceded that figure 8 was ambiguous or confusing, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And so isn't the real debate, the real dispute over whether or not there was a sufficient finding of a motivation to combine Meyer and Wernz?
Right. I mean, effectively, looking at figure 8 and you look at, well, there's no dispute that dash line 5 is a seal. There's no dispute about that. Everyone agrees. The only dispute is whether or not this other line, would an ordinary artisan be motivated to put a seal there if, in fact, it's not a seal because it doesn't explicitly say it. Initially, the examiner said that looks like a seal because it's a dashed line just like dash line 5. It's up by the hem where the cords, where the pull cords go through. It looks like a seal. They came in with an affidavit just like the opposing counsel said. And after looking at the affidavit, the declaration by Mr. Cobbler said, well, there's no other expressed teachings other than this line in this drawing that it's a seal. So the examiner said, all right, even if it's not explicitly a seal and even if it's ambiguous, it would have been obvious to put one there. And the examiner, and you say, well, why? Well, when he looks at the secondary reference, which I think everyone discussed, the Wernz reference, and you look at that, and yes, it is a different type of package. It's not a garbage bag, but it's a loose, flexible bag with a drawstring, with a hem, and sure enough, there's a seal up by where the cords are, the pull cords are. And the examiner identified that reference and looked at that evidence and said, you know, they knew to put an extra seal up there to keep those cords from falling down if they get slack. So to make sure there was easy access to the cords, the examiner's rationale was, if you didn't have a seal in figure 8 of Meyer up where that unnumbered dashed line is, the one that's not mentioned but it's shown, he says without a seal there, there'd be a problem because then...
But what about his argument that Wernz really was for a totally different purpose?
Right. I don't think that's a problem, Your Honor, because the only reason the examiner is looking to Wernz is it's another flexible bag with a drawstring and a hem and up around the top edge. And sure enough, they've got two seals. They've got an upper seal to hold those cords up there in place, and then there's a lower seal further down. Here, when you look at Meyer, the examiner says, well, this teaching from Wernz would motivate an ordinary artisan to actually have another seal up where that unnumbered dashed line is. And the reason why is if you didn't have that seal there, if these cords were in a loosened state, for example, when your trash bag isn't completely taut, let's say you take your big bag and you put it into a smaller can, it's going to be not taut, it's going to be loose, the drawstring could drop down. And if it dropped down because there was no seal there, all the way down to seal 5, which is a big gap, and when you reach in through the opening, what they call apertures for accessing the drawstrings, you would have difficulty accessing the strings. Accordingly, in the examiner's view, based on that evidence, it would have been obvious to put a seal there. So that's the rationale. If you think you go to page APPX 390 of the...
When you're saying would have been obvious, so are you saying that, right, that the examiner said it would be obvious to combine Wirtz and Meyer, are you saying that somehow this is a KSR, there's
right.
a limited...
I don't think the examiner ever said, I'm going to combine all the physical embodiments of Wirtz and put them in Meyer. I think what the examiner said is, I need to figure out whether or not an ordinary artisan looking at figure eight of Meyer would have known and would have been motivated to put an extra seal where this unnumbered dashed line is. And he says, in light of the teachings of Wirtz that shows a seal up by that upper hem area to keep the cord from drooping down, it would have been obvious to do that. That's the examiner's rationale. So I think, you know, the examiner didn't just pull that out of the air. The examiner did look at other prior art, the Wirtz reference, saw that, yes, seals were used up closer to the channel or the duct where the cords pass through, and that's exactly what you've got here with Meyer. You have a bag.
So you're saying that to the extent that there were any gaps in the motivation to combine analysis, that doesn't matter because it really wasn't a pure motivation to combine case. It was more a KSR, this is reasonable, ordinary artisan in light of everything that's understood would have done this.
Right. And what? And how does the ordinary? How do we know what the ordinary artisan understood? By looking at the evidence in the record. What's the evidence in the record? The teachings of these other flexible bags that show hems with seals and up near where the pull cords are. And the examiner took that knowledge that an ordinary artisan would have from that evidence and said, therefore, if you didn't have a seal here, you'd have this problem of the drawspring dropping. And therefore, in the examiner made a finding and said, therefore, an ordinary artisan would have known to add a seal there. And that's why he rejected it as obvious. That, I think that's ultimately the rationale that we're really disagreeing about. And I think it is based on evidence. It is based on evidence in the record. That's where the examiner got the teachings. And I think you can see that also reiterated in the board decision, where the board reiterates that rationale, that the examiner's reasoning is you don't want to have a drawstring that's inaccessible in this trash bag. You want to be able to get it. And all the references teach that. Every one of the references, I think, Meyer, Wirtz, I think there's another, Kugler and Piazza, each one of them say you have to have access, ready access to the drawstring so you can pull the strings and cinch the bag. That's the idea.
Well, and did I understand you to say, maybe I misunderstood or misheard you. Did you say that there was a, we know we have the Cobbler declaration or affidavit. Did you say there was also an affidavit submitted by the examiner?
No. No, Your Honor. There's no the examiner simply relied on the teachings of the reference okay. to determine what an ordinary artisan would know.
That.
No, there was no affidavit by the examiner. But this is the findings of the examiner. In our view, based on this record, those findings are based on evidence in the record, and that's why those findings, you know, support the rejection. So I think that's. Are there any other questions that you might have? But I think we've addressed at least what appellant has argued here today.
And so the focus of the entire rejection is the placement of the lower bodied line. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think the problem is, as I had mentioned, when we look at figure eight on page appendix 454, there's a nice big picture of it. And when you look at that picture, you can see number five is it's undisputed that that's a seal. And then it's that gap between number five and the bottom of duct six, where there's this unnumbered dashed line that we actually created this a picture of this in our brief, and we point to this unnumbered dashed line. If you looked at page 24 of our brief, we've reproduced this drawing from appendix 454, and we have an arrow pointed to the unnumbered dashed line that we're talking about. That's the line that isn't described specifically in the specification of the prior art Meyer reference, but the examiner says that looks like a seal, and although it's ambiguous, there's evidence in the record to support why an ordinary artisan would put a seal there. And what the examiner's rationale is if you didn't have a seal there, these cords, number 9, number 12, number 10, if they were loose in a loosened state, they would drop down all the way down to dash line number 5, and then if you, the user, were to put your hands through this, what they call opening aperture 814, you wouldn't be able to have easy access to that cord. Therefore, an ordinary artisan would know and would want to put a seal right where that unnumbered dashed line is.
Well, Mark, in the Meyer patent, we see the words seam and seal What exactly? They sometimes seem to be used interchangeably, sometimes not.
Yeah.
What do you understand to be the difference between those two words as used in Meyer?
I understand your point, Your Honor, and I've read...
a little confusing.
I've read this Meyer reference probably four or five times, and what I've learned is they are a little bit loose with the language, that they aren't really precise, where they use certain words in different ways. And for example, if you go to column 3 on page appendix 456 of Meyer, at the very top, they use that language seamed. Flap 8 is seamed, for example, welded to the side panel as schematically shown at 5. So what they're saying is seaming or sealing or welding or heat sealing, these are all interchangeable terms. So they take two pieces of plastic, flat pieces of plastic, they put them next to each other. They run a beam across there.
You're saying sealing, when we see seam and seal, they're kind of interchangeable as distinct from the word channel.
Correct. I think channel, they also use the word duct. They talk about duct number 6, they also call it channel 6. And as you pointed out earlier, when we look at the duct 6 in figure 8, it's the place where the drawstrings can pass. And they can kind of sit inside this duct. So then when you go to pick up this trash bag at the end of the week when it's filled with trash, and you want to grab it and cinch it, you can easily grab these strings, pull them, tighten it up, pull the bag out, and take it. That's the idea. And if the strings got lost in there because the gap in there was very long, the way figure 8 reflects, the examiner's point is you wouldn't be able to get those strings very easily. Therefore, an ordinary artisan would want to have a seal up at that upper rim, just like Wernz has a seal at the upper rim to make sure the drawstrings don't fall down too far. That's basically the basis for the rejection.
So you read Meyer, is that entire space, which is Mark 3 on that figure 8 of Meyer, is sealed?
Yeah, on Meyer figure 8, 5 is a seal, and then when you get up by 3, that's kind of an open area where 3 is, and then when you get up to duct 6, that's an open area where the strings pass. And what the examiner is saying is, if you didn't have this extra seal up just to define that more narrow duct 6...
What we're calling line X.
Well, we're calling line X, exactly. The string would drop down. The drawstring would drop all the way down to seal 5 because it couldn't go beyond seal 5 because that's the bottom of where the bottom seal is, and that would be a problem.
So you're saying space 3 is sealed? Is that whole area is sealed?
I think there's only a seal at dashed line 5, and then above 5, there's two pieces of plastic that are loose together. And then when you get up to...
Well, there are a whole bunch of dotted lines, but there is this space... Which
Correct.
Is Mark 3.
Correct. And that's simply defined as, that's just described as a channel in the spec. They call it a channel, which is another opening where something could fit in.
It's called a seam.
Well, they call it that in the spec, Your Honor. If we go to page, let's go up to page A456, appendix 456 at column 3 again at the very top, the same section we were reading from at lines 4, 5, and 6. Each one of the channels 3 and 4 defines a duct or a hollow number 6 between the side wall portion 7 and 8. So what they're saying is...
It says channel seams 3, 4 forming the ducts 6. What they call 3 a seam. It's obviously not a seam.
Well, along the edge of 3, along down the side, that is definitely a sealed seam. But across the middle, it's simply a channel that helps form the duct 6 up above. And then
later at line 53 says the seams 3, 4 are folded over.
Yes.
As if that's really intended as a folded over seam, which
right.
Does not help Mr. Cobbler at all. But
right. I think
it's certainly hard to know what to make of this.
I think there's a lack of precision in the language in the specification. There's no doubt about that. But when you look at figure 8, the drawings reflect pretty clearly that there's drawstrings in the upper portion of the bag that their purpose is to cinch the bag. That's what they're there for. And the examiner's point is keeping those drawstrings within a duct 6 that's reasonable in height prevents them from dropping down too low. And accordingly, in the examiner's view, and based on the prior references, it would have been obvious to have a seal, if you want to call it a seam, a seal along the length of unmarked dotted line just below 6 there. That's basically the examiner's position. And the board affirmed that position based on this evidence, Your Honor.
Okay. Any more questions for the government? Anything else? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Salinger.
Thank you, Your Honors. The examiner found that Wirtz teaches the hem seal is important to keep the drawstring at an accessible position, and the government repeats that position. That's just wrong. Wirtz teaches accessing the drawstrings 18 by positioning them outside of the bag in the notches. That's shown in figures 2, 4, and 7. And so Wirtz has no concern about the drawstring dropping because the strings are collected outside of the bag. Meyer says nothing about a drawstring drop or concern about it. And Meyer doesn't teach that problem. Meyer uses knots 12 on each end. If a drawstring were to sag hypothetically, you wouldn't have to worry about it. So you just pull the knotted end. The government in its brief points to some language in Meyer, but both, as we say in response, both of the portions that Meyer, the government relies on in Meyer, actually presume the drawstring is there without worrying about some hypothetical line. So the drawstrings already solve this problem, which is really a search for a rationale to combine the references.
Yes, Your Honor. You heard Mr. LaMarca argue that in fact, this really isn't a combining of references. They're saying that Wirtz teaches the fact that there's a two-ply sidewall with two spaced apart seals with a two-ply sidewall, and it doesn't matter what the purpose of it is because you could adapt that structure to what is at least ambiguously disclosed in Meyer. In other words, Wirtz was just informative of what one of skill in the art would have understood Meyer to be.
Well, perhaps, Your Honor, but let me say the actual rejection is Meyer in view of Wirtz. But in either event, if I assume hypothetically that Wirtz is sufficiently close that even though it's not exact, there's still the issue of why would you combine it? Wirtz doesn't have a problem with drawstrings drooping. And Meyer doesn't have a problem with drawstrings drooping. They both have their own solution. Meyer was concerned about a knife effect when you pull the drawstrings at the top of the bag. That's what Meyer was concerned about. Meyer wasn't concerned about drooping. That's why the knots were there. The knots would keep the string from drooping. And somebody just pull it and pull the drawstring out. And again, the disclosures in Meyer on which the government relies actually presume the drawstring is available, not one they have to find. Let me just close with both Meyer and Wirtz precede the filing date of Mr. Cobbler's application by 22 years. In the Leo Pharmaceutical case, the court did note that 22 years of silence is an indication of hindsight. And I mentioned that in response to Your Honor's question about KSR. If the court has no other questions.
Any more questions? Any more questions? Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.